good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, October 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Time again for one of our regular baking sessions with Chef Gail Sokol. Chef Gail is an educator, author, podcaster, popular YouTuber. Today, Gail will teach us how to make a pumpkin-shaped sourdough bread centerpiece. She's hacking it now. Maybe you can hear it. Now, if that's not your cup of tea, Gail is a font of knowledge about all things baking, so feel free to call on any topic. But we will talk about this thing, and you can hear it. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. You want to talk baking with Gail Sokol? You can email VoxPop. All right, put down the knife. You can email VoxPop@WAMC.org. Not the first time I've said that to her, I'll tell you that. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday. And we welcome back our pal, Chef Gail Sokol. We'll talk baking today. Gail is an educator and author, a faculty member for years at Schenectady County Community College and the Sage Colleges. She's the author of a widely used textbook entitled About Professional Baking and a cookbook, Baking with Success. She has a lovely podcast called Baking Radio. She is the star of an expanding universe of YouTube videos on all baking how-tos. There's a link on today's show page here at WAMC if you want to see what she's talking about today. Today, Gail will teach us about pumpkin-shaped sourdough bread centerpiece. If you didn't catch that, I'll say it again. Pumpkin-shaped sourdough bread centerpiece. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Chef Gail Sokol, how are you?
Good. I'm doing well. You seem to be having a meltdown, but that's okay.
Wow. we're started already. You know, I have never seen, well, full disclosure, if you're listening at home and there's probably three of you now, and we'll probably get some more in a little bit. Oh. Studio A, where we are, is just across the hall from the newsroom. So 5 minutes ago, I just put my head out the door here and said, hey, anybody in the newsroom want a piece of bread? I have never seen a response like that. This room, violated fire code for a little while there. People were in here. The loaf of pumpkin-shaped sourdough bread centerpiece is decimated. You got a picture, though.
Oh, yeah.
So what's happening with you?
The fall is just coming so fast, and now winter and Halloween is within a week, and I'm just not ready. I got to think about Thanksgiving. And then I thought, centerpiece. We can make this type of beautiful, it doesn't even have to be sourdough, but like a yeasted bread centerpiece in the shape of pumpkins, either for Halloween, either for Thanksgiving. You could make small ones up and down your table with apples and little pumpkins around them. Yeah. That would be
awesome.
How
did you shape this? Do you have a mold?
No, you don't need a mold. So you just make a round boule, like a boule. Is like a round.
Okay.
You could say boule.
Boule.
It's a French word.
All right.
And I put it in a mold, like a wooden basket called a banneton. And that's what some chefs use. And they have like these round circles, concentric circles.
Yeah.
And you flour it, you put your dough in, and you let it retard overnight in the refrigerator. So it's a long, slow fermentation overnight, which can really only be done with sourdoughs. The next day, you flip it out. And then I flip it out onto kitchen twine that I have put in two X's. So I make one X. 45 degrees from one, I make another X. So you have four pieces of kitchen twine.
I'm confused. Believe it or not, I'm confused.
Okay, let's go slow.
I'm trying to visualize the kitchen twine.
Let me talk slower.
It's parallel to the counter.
Yes, it's down on the counter. You put it right on the pan you're going to bake it on.
Okay.
So you're going to put one piece of string horizontally, one piece completely at 90 degrees, so it looks like an X.
Okay.
And then 45 degrees from that, from one of those straight pieces,
yeah,
you put another line and then make another X.
So you have a series of 45-degree angles.
Right, but four pieces.
Okay.
And you'll get eight sections of your pumpkin. Now, if you want to make more, because some pumpkins have more sections, you can do more. But I wanted to take a razor. You're laughing.
No, no,
I wanted
not.
To make a razor. Stop laughing. And I wanted to make cuts so they'd be really decorative and very pretty.
I got to say, it's
so
beautiful.
So that's what I did.
It you know, no offense, but it's a little flat for a pumpkin.
I knew you'd be bringing this up.
A pumpkin on Jupiter, yeah. Yes. Okay, for sure.
All right, so what happened with this one was, instead of the water, I thought I'd be creative and try something different. I tried getting carrot juice as a replacement for the water.
No kidding.
And in the recipe. So it does have an orange hue if you look at it, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely does.
All right, get the smile
off. It is a beautiful thing to look at.
It's a beautiful thing to look at. And I put pumpkin seeds in the dough as well. So the sweetness in the carrot juice, and carrot juice, if you don't sweeten it, is just naturally sweet.
Yeah.
It will prevent the rise of a dough. If it's a lot of sweet doughs, don't rise as much as doughs like white bread or hearth breads like a regular sourdough with just water. They just tend to not rise as well. So I learned we got ourselves a flatter pumpkin. Now, without the carrot juice and you just use water, this would have been a lot bigger.
I got to tell you, flavor-wise, not sure I had much better bread than this.
No, thank you.
And
it's good.
Maybe the carrot juice is
an interesting. It might have done something. The other thing is I have three sourdoughs that I am a mother to for the past 27 years.
All right. Now we're getting somewhere.
Okay, so I have Bubbles that was from 1997. So she's the oldest.
Bubbles.
She's my eldest.
An ex-stripper, was she?
No.
Okay.
Please.
Fine.
Do not speak smack
fine.
About her.
Okay.
And then I have Fräulein Brecht, which in German means Miss Vomit, because when you first make them, they look like baby vomit. The third one, and she's wonderful. She's made award-winning breads. The third one is the Yeastinator. This is the Yeastinator.
Okay, and how old is the Yeastinator?
I think she's about 25, and maybe sometimes they lose their edge.
Now, okay, let's start at the beginning with sourdough. This is a good place to go here.
Yes.
The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to the phones and the emails shortly. Sourdough. How long? So you've been doing sourdough at least 27 years.
Yes, at least.
How old is Bubbles?
Bubbles is 27.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Bubbles. They're all 27?
No. She's 25. The Yeastinator's 25.
Right.
In between, I had Fräulein Brecht.
You know.
Oh, I know what. I know. Fräulein Brecht was my daughter's seventh grade science experiment. Her hypothesis was sourdoughs can basically stave off bacterial growth. So she tried to prove that. So she made three different starters, a whole wheat one, a rye one, and then we had Fräulein Brecht. And I did keep the whole wheat one and the rye one. I didn't care for them as much, so I let them go.
Okay. So you're telling me your daughter is just about as nuts as you.
No, she thinks I'm nuts for keeping it, but I kept it, so I have three now.
So the sourdough can live on and on and on.
Explain. For almost forever. So
what's going on?
Okay, so there's several different types of yeast breads. There are straight doughs, like white bread and hamburger rolls and challah and all that. So you make them, you put all your ingredients together with commercial yeast. You bake them off, you know, you let them rise, you bake them off, and everyone eats and is happy.
Yeah.
Then there's something known as a pre-ferment. That's what a sourdough is, basically the category of pre-ferments. So a sourdough is one of many different types. Pre-ferment means you mix a little bit of the dough first, flour, water, a little yeast.
Yeah.
You can let it rise for anywhere from 1 hour to several hours, and then you bake it all off. That is something like a poulish, which gets its name from Poland.
Now, just stop you there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to break your train because you're clearly on fire here. 800-348-2551. You said you can go an hour or several hours.
Well,
what difference does it make to the taste and the texture?
That's what I'm getting
at.
So when you make a pre-ferment, there are pre-ferments that are not sourdoughs. They're meant to be used up all at once. But you just give a little bit of the dough. You make a little bit of the dough ahead of time.
Right.
It will give flavor, extra flavor, more chemical compounds, flavorful compounds that will mix in with the dough and give you a little more oomph. It won't taste like a white bread. It won't taste, you know, like a Wonder Bread or something like that. But a sourdough you never throw out. So if I feed my sourdough, remember I said you feed this little bit of pre-ferment with a little flour, water, and a little yeast,
yeah.
And you let it go. Then you build your dough into it. You
yeah.
add that to a main dough that you will build with
it. So you just use a little bit when you're doing
this.
Well,
wait a second. No, you use the whole thing when you make just a regular pre-ferment, like a poulish
right.
or something called a biga, something like that. A sourdough is a whole different animal. A sourdough is like raising a child.
Oh,
it's
expensive.
Forever.
Oh.
And it's expensive. It's not that expensive. No. So what you do is when you have a sourdough, you are going to grow this thing from scratch. And I did not use any commercial yeast in mine. Although you can use a pinch or two of commercial yeast to get it going. I use natural yeast. Natural yeast is everywhere. And if you're a baker or a cook and you're baking a lot in your kitchen, there is a natural yeast always that is floating around.
Okay, hold that thought because I find that fascinating. Let's take a quick break here. Natural yeast coming up here on Vox Pop. It's Chef Gail Sokol, sourdough, and your baking questions. You can email voxpop@wamc.org or call 800-348-2551. We'll be back. The night has 1,000 eyes, and with inflation, it's worth about 12 eyes now. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Baking with Chef Gail Sokol. It's been a while, and we're talking about sourdough. Now, it'll probably break your flow to answer a question from Jan.
Okay.
Do you want to do that?
Or go ahead.
We'll get back to the natural yeast in just a moment.
Okay.
Jan writes in at voxpop@wamc.org, recently, whenever I'm baking cakes, cookies, muffins, instead of adding the salt to the dry ingredients, as most recipes instruct, I've been adding it to the wet ingredients to be sure it dissolves completely into the batter. Is there a technical reason why I should not do that?
No, that's fine. It's usually traditionally put in with the dry ingredients, and if she whisks those dry ingredients together, it should get mixed in.
Oh, okay.
The only dry ingredient, if you call it a dry ingredient, that sometimes gets put in with the wet ingredients is brown sugar, because brown sugar is sort of like wet sand
yeah.
as you pack it, and it doesn't always dissolve in dry ingredients. So sometimes that goes in.
So it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter. It depends on what type of cake or cookie you're using. Creaming method, you know, like a simple two-bowl method, a muffin method. It depends.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Any baking question is A-OK for Gail Sokol. Now, getting back, and we'll get to the phones in a moment, getting back to the natural yeast.
Yes.
You said it's in the air everywhere.
It's everywhere. It's in here.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's here. And when you're here, you got your own probably natural yeast.
I have my own yeast?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at San Francisco. Look at every single place in the world. They all have their own yeast that's endemic to that particular area. And that's why sourdough yeast spreads, sourdoughs there in San Francisco taste so different. They have a yeast named after them.
All right. So Bubbles is 27, okay?
Yes.
Bubbles, the sourdough,
yes.
started with whatever yeast was floating around in your house.
Well, I also used one of them, the Yeastinator, was made with potato water.
And why is that a good thing?
Why is that?
Yeah.
Because I took a peeled potato. You don't want to use the peel because there's different things and chemicals on potatoes and bacteria. And I boiled it in water till it got soft.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the potato for something else. And then I kept the water and brought it down to a lower temperature, like a room temperature.
Right.
And added the water. I used it as an attractant for natural yeast, because they love sugar. If you give them sugar, they will come. Ray,
so
it's just like Field of Dreams.
You're kidding me.
So no,
the yeast,
I'm not.
It's the yeast is intelligent and it spots it. It'll look down there. Gail's got some potato water.
One-celled, microscopic living organisms. And if you're doing a lot of cooking and baking in your particular kitchen, you will make an incredible sourdough. But It can't be guaranteed. And any cookbook that says you will have an incredible sourdough guaranteed with just natural yeast. I did not add any commercial yeast to it. Very often, if you Google all different recipes for how to make your own sourdough, they very often start with maybe a pinch, a teaspoon of commercial yeast that you buy in the grocery store. And then after a while, your natural yeast, in an ideal world, should take over that commercial yeast, and you should now have a fully natural yeast starter.
This is interesting.
Or sourdough starter.
So I got back to Bubbles, who's 25.
27.
20. Well, you know, 27.
She's my eldest.
She looks young, though, I got to
say. She
does. The taste will change over time. The yeast is not going to be a constant, right?
The yeast, well, like I said, if you use commercial yeast, that will be overtaken by if you're lucky.
But you didn't.
Wild yeast. I did not use it.
Right.
Mine, I figured it either had something to do with the way I keep my house. That natural yeast was there. I also made Bubbles. I didn't make her with potato water as an attractant to the yeast that was naturally in my house. I used grapes for my first Bubbles was my first. My Ellis, I used grapes wrapped in natural, organic grapes, unwashed, because every fruit and vegetable out there, you know, do you ever go apple picking?
Not if I can help it.
Oh, stop it. And you see like the white stuff on the apples? That's natural yeast. It's on all fruits
really?
And vegetables in the field. Yes.
Oh, I thought that was some
Leave
sort of
the
an insecticide.
Occasionally, yes.
Listen, let's grab one call, and then I want to get back to this. Because where I was going was, the flavor, has it noticeably changed over 25 years?
Yes, it gets better.
So let's go to Joan in Schenectady, because Joan is very impatient. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Chef Gail Sokol, and who doesn't, Joan in Schenectady's on. Hello, Joan.
Hey, Ray, you should only tell the truth on public broadcasting.
What
know
do you mean?
That, right?
What do you mean?
Not impatient. I was here laughing the whole time.
All right, I'll put you on hold for another 20 minutes then. That's fine. No, go ahead. You're all
nah.
set.
Nah. No. Oh, this is so much fun. I'm afraid to be a mother to sourdough because I don't know what my kitchen would breed. It's not worth thinking about. But I love the idea of the bread centerpiece. And my question, Gail, give me some ideas for like the finished product. Do you fill some of the bread with things that people can serve themselves? Do you kind of make it look like a jack-o'-lantern? What's your thoughts on presentation?
Well, what I did was, Joan, is I actually created with the string, the kitchen twine, we never got to describing how we actually did it.
I can picture what you did. Yeah.
Right. So we put the dough on top of those two X's, and then we pulled the X's up, so the opposite strings up, and made a knot.
I see.
Sort of close to the dough, and we left them. So through the baking process, you have these four with opposite strings. You're going to have those baking with the dough. So as the dough rises, you're going to form eight sections, what would look like a pumpkin. And then after baking, you cut the strings off. But before I put it in the oven and I just tied the strings, I then took a straight razor, or you can take a lame, L-A-M-E, it's a razor with a handle. But I have more control.
Okay.
It's something that bakers use to score their bread, to make a slash.
Okay.
So it rises in a way that's called oven spring, and you can make nice patterns like I did.
Sure.
So, yes, Joan, you could make a jack-o'-lantern on yours. You could do whatever you want. And then I took cinnamon sticks and made a stem after it came out of the oven. I put those in later on. So you could make a series of these to go down your Thanksgiving table. You could use them with smaller little, you know, like bun rolls and put them. It doesn't have to be a sourdough, but it does have to be a relatively sturdy dough.
Okay. And Joan, this is a beautiful presentation, but it's surpassed.
I can imagine.
It's surpassed by the taste. And I think we need to talk more about how this is done, because I have never, Kaylin Brown came in during the break and said, big applause from everybody in the newsroom who ate two-thirds of this thing. It was incredible. Joan, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks, Joan.
800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. Baking with Chef Gail Sokol. Now, back to the yeast, the sourdough, the evolution. You said it was a child. It was like a child.
Yes.
Children grow up.
Okay.
They get more expensive and they grow up.
Yes, but they also get better. They become more human. You get to know them better. You get to know their likes and dislikes. So when I keep my three sourdoughs in an airtight container, labeled and dated in a scrupulously clean small container.
Doesn't that kill it if it's airtight?
No. And I put it in the refrigerator so they lie dormant, okay, for several months. And then when I want to take one out and bake with it, if I want to take bubbles out, I take her out. I take my 1 gallon container. I have a 1 gallon, very, very clean container. I put bubbles in there. There's only 2 cups of her. And by the time she's in the fridge, there's a little layer of like brown liquid on top.
Mm.
And that's known as hooch.
Hooch.
I knew you would like that.
Well.
So hooch is just alcohol. Because
really?
What is fermentation, Ray? It's just yeast that eats sugar and give off carbon dioxide and alcohol. Bakers are interested in the carbon dioxide to help breads rise. You are interested in the alcohol.
So what do you do with the hooch?
You can either do one of 2 things. You can pour it off if you want less of a sour flavor, or I mix it back in because I like a little tang to
my
bread.
There is a little tang to this bread,
for sure.
I like
it. Yeah. I knew that. So that's what I do. So I mix it up. I put it into my bigger container, and I let her sort of get to room temperature for about an hour. Then I feed her. I give her 1 cup of bread flour and 1 cup of 78 degree water, 78 degrees Fahrenheit.
Why
water.
78?
Because sourdoughs can survive at cooler temperatures than a commercial yeast. And I stir her up. I cover her not with a plastic lid. I cover her with plastic wrap and a big rubber band. Because the last time I put a lid on her, it popped off.
Oh, cool. Because
of all the carbon dioxide.
Interesting.
So you feed her 3 times a day, hence like a child, 3 times a day, every 4 to 6 hours. And if you're going to be gone a little longer, you throw in a little extra flour at your last feed. So in the morning I feed her. I make a little time schedule, just like a baby. And I'll say feed 1, feed 2, feed 3. And then at night I go to bed. When I wake up the next day, it's usually really the plastic wrap has sort of bubbled up. I know she's alive and well. It usually takes 1 to 2 days.
In the fridge.
No. She's out now. Now I'm going to bake with her. So
okay.
I have to feed her for 3 days.
Now you're using all of this sourdough.
I'm not using it all. I'm feeding it all to bring it back and get it strong.
But you're changing it then.
Well, wait a second.
All right.
I'm not changing it. I'm reviving it and,
okay.
and allowing it to come alive again.
Reanimated.
Okay? Reanimated.
Bread.
And then once
okay.
I'm ready to bake the third day, I want to make sure I bake with it no longer than 14 to 16 hours after its last feed.
Why?
Because it will start petering out. It'll get less bubbly. It'll get really thin. And then it's really, you know, something that you want to bake with very quickly or use it as discard. You know, sometimes you can do that in pancakes or cookies.
Right.
So what I do is I'll take what I want out of her and I save. Always never throw out a sourdough. Sourdoughs go on forever. So you want to save. I always save 2 cups of sourdough. I measure her first before I even make the recipe. I put her back in my clean container, redate it, relabel it. Put it back in the fridge.
Now, why is dating it important?
Because you want to know how old it is. You can't keep. It's like having a TV dinner in the freezer. You got to know how long it's in there. You don't want to eat something that's freezer burnt and just allowed to stay in there forever. So I want to make sure I'm keeping them active.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure you play with your kids and you want to make sure they're healthy and happy. So every couple of months, I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm having company. I'm going to make sourdough.
You know, do you see 20 years down the road, you still having these 3 sourdoughs?
Yes. Yes. And they get better in flavor. Now, I look
at... Why do they get better in flavor?
Because each iteration, each time you feed them, they get stronger and stronger. And there are stories, Ray, that just like the Loch Ness Monster, where people have been known to have vats of sourdough in various bread factories where something drops in. And they think the sourdough is dead. It's
like
killed.
What? Like a shoe or something?
No,
what do
like
you mean?
Like a bottle of soda or
oh,
something
really?
Weird. And the sourdough goes on because it can sort of get itself back. It can sort of recertify itself, get itself, you know, like, that doesn't bother us. You know, we're okay. And it sets itself back to where it should be. And it's wonderful. So that's why mine have lived so long now, because of the way she didn't rise as much. I see you laughing. No. I'm wondering if the yeastinator, maybe she was a little floppy the second day. The first day, they're always a little floppy. The second day of feeding, they start getting nice and foamy. The third day, they should be like, bake with us. We're ready to go.
Okay.
And you never keep the full amount of starter. Every morning, I throw out everything but 2 cups and start again.
You so throw it away.
Just everything but 2 cups. Otherwise, you'd have a studio. This studio would be filled with sourdough.
Cool.
You don't want that much.
Well.
You don't.
I don't know.
You definitely don't.
So anyway, she's floppy, basically.
I think it's the carrot juice. I don't think it was the yeastinator, but you said it, so I don't know.
Have you ever used the carrot juice before?
No.
I think it's such a cool idea.
I know.
Has it ever been done, or is this your
own thing?
I don't
know. I don't know. I just said, why not? Let's try
something
orange.
Everyone loved it in there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've not seen a reaction like that in a long time.
Yeah, so it had a little like sweeter vegetal something, but very mild. And there's also a little wheat germ in there, pumpkin seeds. I wanted to get that harvesty flavor.
And so, just so you know, this recipe and a video about how to make it is available through Gail. Gail has a great website, but the links are right on our page for today's show, WAMC.org. Got to say, this is really tremendous. And I'm learning a lot about sourdough. Now, I asked Amy Halloran about this one time. I mean, how old is the oldest sourdough?
Do probably people keep over 100.
Really?
Over 100. Yeah.
Can it go to the point where, okay, this, like you said, floppy here. What's the name of this one?
the yeastinator.
The yeastinator is getting maybe past its prime?
I don't know. I'm not tossing her until I make bread with her again and not use carrot juice and see what happens.
Why is sourdough, why does it have this mystique?
I think it's because there's this symbiotic relationship between two substances, yeast and bacteria. So there's always bacteria in things, and bacteria is what gives the tang to sourdough because they give off waste products. Remember, yeast gives off alcohol and carbon dioxide.
Right.
Bacteria give off lactic acid and acetic acid, mild acids, but acids that give a tang.
Okay.
So when you are building, you know, and helping a bread rise by adding a little sugar to proof the dough when you make a regular dough.
That's what proofing is.
A straight dough, right. When you add a little sugar to your yeast and a little water and let it bubble up so you know the yeast is alive, and then you continue to make your dough.
Right.
That's with a straight dough. But here, when you have any bacteria in the bowl just naturally there for a straight dough, that commercial yeast gets fully... It will eat all the sugar. The bacteria will have none because the commercial yeast are super into...
They're voracious.
They're voracious.
All right.
That's
all right. Okay.
So, but natural yeast eat different sugars than bacteria.
Well,
they share.
How do you know that?
It's been proven. They share. So they live together in harmony, symbiotically.
So they sing Kumbaya making the bread. Good for you.
Yeah, right.
Let's take a break. 800, you know what? Because I have no idea what's going on. But that's usual when Chef Gail Sokol is here. 800-348-2551. Sourdough today. And whatever else you want to talk about. You got a baking question? This lady knows stuff. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wmc.org. So live, doing the George Harrison Beatles classic Taxman here on Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Chef Gail Sokol joins us today. Dave in Clarence, New York writes in, will this episode be available in written word? LOL, my head is spinning. Well, Dave, welcome to the world of Chef Gail Sokol, because that's the way it is every time. You talk to your sourdough, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, I do.
They're like children, right?
Yeah.
If you and Harold get divorced, who gets custody?
I do.
Really?
He can have the real kids. The human kids are his. These are mine.
Okay, fair enough.
Absolutely.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's sourdough and anything else you want to talk about today. What is your favorite bread to bake? What type?
Rosemary olive oil.
Ooh.
So good. And that won an award many years ago at a major contest that this is a funny story, Ray.
Yeah.
So the chef I worked with a certified master chef who will remain nameless locally.
Okay.
And he said, I got a big job for you. I need you to make a 3-part dessert for this competition. I need you to help me make the appetizer brioche because we're going to put some foie gras on it.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay.
That's not a dessert.
And then I want you to make the bread too.
Okay.
And we tried many different of my sourdoughs. Okay. They were still around. They were new, but they were around. And we made all different types. And he fell in love with my rosemary olive oil.
Mm.
He said, I hate to do this to you. And it knew it was a 2-day process because it has to retard overnight.
Right.
And then you have to bake it the next day. So he said, you might be up all night long making this. I apologize, but you're going to have to. And you're going to have to make like 4 loaves.
Oh.
And I went, no, I'm not.
Oh, good. You told him off?
No, I didn't tell him anything.
No.
I said, yes, chef. Sure, chef. And I'm like, hell no. So I went home. My desserts were made right before, like they should be, my ice cream and my whatever.
Yeah.
And the bread I made 2 or 3 weeks before, and I froze it. And you can do that. And you can freeze bread, sourdough, if you wrap it properly. I am the queen of freezing, and you would never know it.
Well, is the chef still around here? Maybe he's listening.
He's around, but he's not. Yeah, he didn't. No,
You want to drop his name?
No.
You sure?
No.
Initials?
No.
Chef Gail Sokol's our guest today. 800-348-2551. We baked today. Jeff is in Stratford. You're on.
Hello.
Hey.
I had a question about the feeding ratios for the starters. And I noticed that Chef there was using a 1-to-1-to-1. And I'm wondering if different ratios are used at different times, depending on when it is that you want to use the starter for a dough.
That's a good question, Jeff. So the 1-to-1-to-1 is usually typical. If I know I'm not going to get home within a feed time of 4 to 6 hours, I may be a little late, I will feed my starter the feed before. Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit more. So instead of 1 cup of flour, I might do 1.25, 1.5. And I will stir that in. If it gets a little thick, I might just splash in a little more 78 degree water. I know enough now what the consistency should be of the starter. So I usually add about 1/4 cup extra just in case I'm going to be late for a feed. And I have been late for feeds before. All right. But they don't complain.
No.
They're okay.
No.
And then they come right back once you put that flour and water in. The big thing is you want to get the temperature of the water correctly, but it is a 1-to-1-to-1. Wherever you look, it's usually 1-to-1-to-1. All right. Some starters, they're smaller amounts, and some starters make a good quantity. Mine makes a good quantity because I don't want to just have a 1/2 cup of starter. I want to make sure I can take 2 cups out and save it at all times. Because the biggest mistake people make, they bake with their starter, they make great bread, and they're like, oh my God, where's the starter? I baked all with it all. I forgot to save it.
Okay.
So,
Jeff, does that satisfy your curiosity?
Yes. Just one other quick question.
Yeah.
A lot of recipes call for mixing the ingredients together. And then once the dough is kind of clumped up, you don't really mix it too well. You let it rest for an hour. And what is the importance of that?
Okay, so I don't know if you're thinking of an auto lease. I know that when I build a dough, I will put my flour, my water, my starter, if I'm making a sourdough, or a little wheat germ or whatever I'm using, and you mix it, and it can appear very sticky. I do not put my salt in at this point. I leave my salt out, and then I let it rest. I do not let it rest for an hour. You may be thinking of making a poolish, like a just a sponge which can be left out for an hour to many hours, okay? And that is a pre-ferment, but not a sourdough starter.
Nah.
That's different.
Okay.
This is the 1 hour thing is to be used up completely. But if an auto lease, very quickly, an auto lease is when you add salt 10 or 15 minutes after your dough has rested.
Yeah.
I cover the mixer with a kitchen towel, let it rest for about 10 minutes before I put my salt in.
Why do you do that?
Because the flour has to take time to absorb all the water so that you get very good, high-quality gluten production.
Aha.
Okay, and gluten is that wheat flour mixed with water that produces that sort of that network of fibers, the protein network that is going to create the final structure and your whole structure in your bread.
Can you make gluten-free sourdough?
You probably can. I do not, but you probably can, but I don't. Yeah. So
it was a little curt.
And that, yes, it was.
Fine.
Then you add your salt, and what a difference after you have that auto lease. It's just like a little rest period, a little nap. And then you add your salt, and then you mix it for about 3 minutes, and then I also put it out on the counter and hand mix it.
Right.
I'm not done yet.
Okay.
And then you'll see the difference. It gets nice and elastic. The dough almost doesn't even have to be needed too much because the salt gives that elasticity to the dough, but it can also react and prevent too much of the yeast from doing its thing and fermentation. So you don't want to add too much salt too soon.
Go ahead,
Jeff. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Can I say goodbye to Jeff now?
Please say goodbye to Jeff.
Jeff, thanks for calling, and I appreciate you being on the Gail Sokol Show. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Now, you've mentioned, you know, you give an extra quarter cup or whatever if you're going to be late. What happens if you dump two or three cups in? What happens?
It gets so thick, the thicker a starter, the slower it's going to rise. So you won't see any fermentation happening. It's like eating too much on Thanksgiving and having a big fat stomach.
Okay.
You can't move. You can't do anything. So you don't want to have it be too thick.
All right. And then this, I have to go back to this, the 78 degree. You sound like you're a scientist. Now, I know baking is very scientific. What happens if it's 79.5 degrees?
You don't want to kill your yeast. Your yeast is natural. Okay. So it's just hanging out. Commercial yeast usually dies at 140 degrees Fahrenheit. All yeast will die at 140. So by the time it goes into the oven, that's when you're ready to have it sing its swan song and actually do that oven spring, that final rise, so that you get the cuts and, you know, if you razor it or whatever. And that's when it dies and it actually sets up a crust and you bake it. But you really want to keep... You want to do low and slow, low temperature, slow fermentation for sourdoughs.
So the yeast sings to. Do you do a lot of mushrooms? No?
Only meringue mushrooms.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Dave is in. Dave, who wrote us a little while ago, is in Clarence. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, Ray. Hello, Gil.
Hi.
A little bit off topic, but I think for the holiday season, what I've decided to do is the Boston brown bread.
Okay.
It's
rye flour, whole wheat flour, and cornmeal.
Okay.
And obviously some quick rising agents. But what I noticed the last time I made it, it's also got molasses and raisins.
Right.
It has a very, very grainy texture, I think because of the white cornmeal. And I'm wondering if you could recommend a partial substitution to make maybe smooth it out just a little bit.
You can leave out, how much cornmeal is in there?
This particular recipe is 3/4 cup.
Why don't you decrease it to like 1/4 cup and then add more of your other flour to make up for it?
Okay, that sounds like a great idea. Is the flavor of rye wheat overpowering?
It can
I've
be.
Never baked
it,
with it.
It can be.
This.
Sometimes people do not care for fully rye bread. They want it, and it doesn't have high quality gluten that it makes. So usually with a rye dough, you'll find other flours like bread flour in there as well. A wheat flour that is not rye, so that the gluten structure will be better. But you're talking about a quick bread. You're talking something different. Right. What other, are there any other flours other than rye and cornmeal in there?
Just 3/4 of whole wheat.
Oh, okay. So you could either increase some of your whole wheat to a cup and decrease your corn. Remember, your cornmeal has no gluten-producing proteins. No gluten-forming proteins at all in cornmeal. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Does not. The whole wheat does. The rye has some. But you can play with those percentages and keep down your cornmeal so you can maybe get away from that graininess.
And you suppose that if I used a little bit of all-purpose or more wheat, that it would give the bread a little more chew?
It will give it wheatiness if you add more wheat flour. It might give it a little more chew. If you add it all purpose, it would give it less chew. It would be more cakey.
There you go.
Okay. Oh, that's exactly my question. Well, thank you very much. I'm excited that I've started this baking thing since
cool.
the pandemic.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Dave, thanks a lot. And brown bread is awesome.
I know you like that.
Amy Halloran was on, I don't know, a few months ago, and she made a bread. I don't think it was strictly speaking a brown bread, but it had plenty of rye in it,
mm-hmm.
and it reminded me instantly of those cans of brown
yes.
bread. Oh, I love those so much. Yeah. Carol in Ulster Park. Carol, you're on.
Good afternoon, Ray and Gail. I tuned in a little late, but I'd like to know if Gail could give us some hints on freezing things. She said she's the queen of freezing. And
yes. All right.
I'm going to
show you what I can do. So it depends on what you're freezing. So if you're freezing, let's say, a loaf of bread, you want to let it bake. You want to let it get to room temperature completely. You want to wrap it in some plastic wrap first, very tight, airtight. Then sometimes I put it in aluminum foil, and then I put it in a freezer bag.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes but date it and label it and make sure you're aware that it's in your freezer. And then when you take it out, unwrap it, leave it at room temperature, put it back in the oven to freshen it up.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And you will, it will
have
taste like
day.
It was freshly baked.
Carol, thanks a lot for the call. Well, what did you do to this pumpkin-shaped loaf? Did you put it in the oven for a while when you got here?
I put it in the oven when I was home, yes.
Oh, when you were home?
Yes.
Because it was
then
warm
and
delicious.
I wrapped it in a little foil here.
Yeah.
And just wrapped it up and then put it in my paper bag. I have a paper bag. I did not put it in plastic wrap or anything because I was bringing it right here. If I had done that, it would have steamed up and then we would have ruined the crust.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I
got
to tell you, you made many a great thing for this show.
I'm so glad.
This is right up there. Let's go to Cass in Saranac Lake. Cass, you're on.
Hi, Gail.
Hi.
I have a question about English muffins. I make sourdough English muffins.
Yum.
And they're a hit with everybody. And I put various things in them. The one thing I'm having trouble with is people love cinnamon raisin muffins. And apparently I've been told that the cinnamon is what kills the dough. Any idea?
It might be inhibiting the fermentation of the dough. What you might want to do is, how much cinnamon are you adding?
Well, let's see. If I make a batch of 16, I use about a tablespoon.
Yeah, you may want to cut down on that. See if you can just go lighter on the cinnamon, and it might help. There are certain, spices that the sourdough just is like, doesn't like.
Huh.
It doesn't defeat the fermentation process. It just slows it down.
Is that a pH thing? Is the pH of the cinnamon?
I don't know if it's the pH. It might be the way that the yeast accept this particular. It might interfere with their eating of the sugars and giving off all of their carbon dioxide.
Hmm.
So it might be something that a flavor thing, with the yeast. And if it is a sourdough, cut back on that cinnamon. That seems like a lot.
Okay.
What about putting it on top? What about like brushing the English muffins with a little butter and sprinkling some cinnamon sugar on top that way after you make them?
Well, yeah, I could definitely do that. Just all the other ones. Well, when you buy them commercially, they're typically not sourdough. They're regular cinnamon raisin.
Right.
It probably has something to do with the sourdough. But is there any difference between the different kinds of cinnamon?
I think there's some stronger cinnamons than others, but I don't think there's any difference. I've never found a difference in baking. The other thing you could do is your sourdough. Did you make your sourdough?
Yes.
Okay.
My sourdough, I don't know, 10 years old or so.
Okay. I'm wondering if, maybe you won't like saying this, but you're saying they don't rise as much with that tablespoon of cinnamon, correct?
So I mix the dough. And I put the cinnamon and raisins in it, and I let it rise for about 2 hours in the bowl. And then the next step is to put them in the rings.
Right.
And then let them rise. And it rises, it's not great in the bowl, but it's done rising. When I put them in the rings, I don't get any rise after that. And another hour and a half rise. Once I've got them in the ring, then they go in the oven.
Okay. I have another suggestion for you. I don't know if you're going to want to do this, but sometimes I've done it, and a lot of bakers have done this that love sourdough. Add a little commercial yeast. Add a little instant active yeast into your dough.
Okay.
And add it in with the flour.
Okay.
Yep. And you may have a little bit more puff.
All right. That sounds delicious, Cass. Thank you for the call. Nicholas in Rosendale writes in, I'm a native Mainer. Can tell Ray vacations there. Yes, I do. Every summer when we can afford it, brown bread in the can is the best, says Nicholas. Warm with butter.
Mm.
Yeah, buddy. Just don't get me started on the Moxie because, you know, the first time we were up in Maine, you ever had Moxie, the soda?
We talked about this.
Yeah, and I went up there and said, I'm going to get the kids some Moxie. And boy, were we surprised.
Mm.
But I found a whiskey that I think will pair with it. My wife brought home barbecue whiskey.
And barbecue.
It's like
whiskey.
A bourbon barbecue, and it tastes like barbecue.
Why don't you barbecue your chicken with it? That would be awesome. Make a barbecue sauce.
I'm going to mix it with Moxie next time I go to Maine. It might be bilious, but it might be all right, we're off topic. Gail Sokol, how do people find out about your comings and goings, check out your videos, etc.?
Yes, they can go to my YouTube channel, Chef Gail Sokol, or my website, chefgailsokol.com.
You know what? You could be troublesome, but you're a great guest on this show. So thank you.
Thank
and we
you.
Will see you in December and then next year and forever and ever. Amen. Support comes from Chef Rick Orlando, hosting culture and food tours of Italy and offering a selection of cooking ingredients for home kitchens. RICORlando.com for more information. At Bodywork Professionals, licensed massage therapist, Albany, Saratoga Springs, Niskayuna, Nick Pavaldi, structural integration practitioner, Rolfer proprietor, 518-MASSAGE, or bodyworkprofessionals.com. You know, after an hour show with Gail, I think I'm ready for a massage myself. It's very stressful. All right, listen, folks, first of all, thanks to Mike Bowen. Beautiful job at the controls. Jim Mountier screened the calls. Jim, thank you. And thank you all for listening and for calling. And thanks again to Chef Gail Sokol for being here. And you can see the video of this particular recipe and get the recipe right on our website, too, wamc.org. I'll be back on Monday. That's a warning. We'll see you at 2 p.m. for Medical Monday. Meantime, have a great weekend.